Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And on this Bastille Day, the 27th day of Ramadan in the Muslim calendar, the deal is done. More than a year of negotiations between delegates from Iran and six nations led by the United States have produced an agreement finally to limit Tehran's nuclear capability in exchange for the easing of Western economic and military sanctions, some that have been in place for decades. Here's President Obama speaking from the White House.
Today, because America negotiated from a position of strength and principle, we have stopped the spread of nuclear weapons in this region. Because of this deal, the international community will be able to verify that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon. This deal meets every single one of the bottom lines that we established when we achieved a framework earlier this spring. Every pathway to a nuclear weapon is cut off.
This deal is about more than just nuclear weapons and centrifuges and verification inspectors. In one bold act of diplomacy, it immediately reestablishes a relationship between Iran and the USA that has been broken since the Iranian Revolution back in 1979. Joining me now, Robin Wright, distinguished scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's a contributing writer for The New Yorker who has been following blow by blow these arduous final round-the-clock talks in Vienna for an article this week on how Iran was being pushed from inside and outside to get this deal done.
Well, this was around-the-clock diplomacy that was sustained by an array of kind of disgusting snacks, carbs, and sweets just to keep them going. This has gone on for 19 days and is the single longest diplomacy for Secretary Kerry, but also the longest U.S. mission in more than three decades. This is really something the administration was committed to. And after many false starts, several delays, they decided to stick with it. And a senior official told me in the wee hours of this morning that they got far more than what they needed to make a convincing case in Washington.
Talk about personal diplomacy here and the status of individual leaders, individual statesmen and statespeople. Is this an Obama deal? Is this a Rouhani deal? Is this a John Kerry deal? Or was this just inevitable? It was going to happen in this eight-year period. The question was when.
Well, it's a little bit of both, but I think your question is very apt. You have the intersection of forces, political forces in the two countries that for the first time they could get beyond 36 years of hostility. President Obama campaigned on getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but most of all, trying to do a deal to prevent a 10th country from getting a nuclear bomb, which might have started a volatile arms race in the Middle East. And he stuck with it doggedly. And Secretary Kerry really was also the right man for it because he has, in his own family, his daughter married a Persian, an Iranian, and he is not unfamiliar with the culture, the ways, the thinking, the tradition, the history of a proud country. And then you had in Iran the election 2 years ago of a centrist president replacing the hardline Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And he brought with him the most talented diplomat in Iran who was educated in the United States, spent most of his adult life in the United States and has two children who were born here and are American citizens. And so that combination of the four men was really important in understanding each other, not knowing how to read each other, and also having the same agenda. You know, it was time after 36 years to get beyond the tensions that had defined not just their relations, but pretty much the state of play across the region.
6 months and the sanctions will be lifted if all goes well, according to the Obama administration. Do you see diplomatic relations actually following after that? And if a deal can be worked out with Congress, what is likely to be the Obama legacy at the end of the term if we look at the U.S.-Iran relationship in, say, 2017?
Well, this is the most important foreign policy initiative the president has taken. And, you know, it is on a par, if not as big, as what Nixon did with China. But ironically, it took the United States longer to repair relations with Iran than it did for the Nixon administration to repair relations with China after its revolution, and much longer than it took for the United States to repair relations with Vietnam, only 20 years after a war that killed 58,000 Americans. So this is important on a lot of different levels in changing the tune, the dynamics, the atmospherics, the capability. I suspect the language will continue to be bombastic out of Iran. The Supreme Leader continues to talk about the United States as its arrogance and call on Iranians to stand up to that arrogance. There will continue to be hardliners who are fearful that Iran's revolution is at stake. There are fears that just like when Gorbachev opened up to the outside world, it led to the unraveling of the Soviet Union, that this deal will also undermine the revolutionaries who, after all, now in advancing age, are concerned about what happens next.
Finally, in the short term, is this verifiable? Do people worry that these terms of verifiability might be difficult to actually execute? And long view, will Iran eventually be a nuclear power? What do the folks you speak with say?
I think for the next 10 years, it's going to be pretty hard for the Iranians to come up with a secret program. For those, you know, it's often said by people who don't know the complexities of building a nuclear program, how hard it is. The Iranians have done it. And in fact, they basically have the knowledge to build a bomb. It's always been creating incentives to make sure they don't. And part of that is bringing them into the international community. So it's verifiable, but it's even tougher than Ronald Reagan's trust and verify. It's distrust and verify. And remember, the military option is still on the table if they don't. It's not totally off forever. Iranians are looking for a bit of normalcy right now. And I think the vast majority of the population wants to get beyond its pariah status, wants to reengage with the international community, wants to be able to breathe deeply and not worry about when they might get struck or going to war again. They fought the grisliest modern Middle East conflict. And remember, the fact that the deal expires in different parts in 10, 15, 20, 25 years doesn't mean it can't be renegotiated. And it doesn't mean that a lot isn't going to change in the meantime.
Robin Wright, distinguished scholar at the Wilson Center in Washington and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She's a contributing writer for The New Yorker. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Did you catch that there? Robin Wright referring to the years of Mikhail Gorbachev in the Soviet Union at the end of the Cold War, where the Reagan administration had to worry about whether to trust an opening from Moscow during nuclear arms limitation talks.
The importance of this treaty transcends numbers. We have listened to the wisdom of in an old Russian maxim. Though my pronunciation may give you difficulty, the maxim is dovayai no provayai. Trust but verify.
Ronald Reagan's famous trust but verify line from the 1980s. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. I suspect that many on Capitol Hill will be using that line in the English translation, I suspect, in the next few weeks regarding this Iran nuclear deal. How is it all playing on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, and they already have been, John, on both sides of this argument, supporters and opponents. Look, there was almost no scenario in the run-up to the presidential election here where Republicans in Congress and in Washington were going to turn a kind eye on this deal, especially after the rhetoric that had been built into rejecting the framework agreement earlier this year. So it's no surprise that Republicans on the Hill are saying this is a terrible deal. They're pointing to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying it's a disaster. They're pointing to other officials saying the deal allows Iran too much latitude. And the President Obama has negotiated from a position of weakness, even though the president himself made a point to say he negotiated from a position of strength.
So this is all exactly what the president is expecting, and he loves this sort of thing. Listen.
So I welcome a robust debate in Congress on this issue, and I welcome scrutiny of the details of this agreement. But I will remind Congress that you don't make deals like this with your friends. We negotiated arms control agreements with the Soviet Union when that nation was committed to our destruction. And those agreements ultimately made us safer. I am confident that this deal will meet the national security interests of the United States and our allies. So I will veto any legislation that prevents the successful implementation of this deal.
There's the threat. Can he deliver?
The president, John, is prepared for exactly how this scenario, at least the first couple of steps of this scenario, how they're going to play out here on Capitol Hill. He already knows where this is going. The final step is the important one. Congress has 60 days to review this deal. That's under the law. Somewhere before the end of that 60 days, they're going to vote up or down to accept or reject the deal. I think in this Republican House and Republican Senate, you can make a bet today if you want that Congress is going to reject this deal. But that's not the end of the scenario, because the president has the veto pen. He can veto that rejection. And then the question becomes, can the House and the Senate Republicans and the Democrats who are aligned with them muster a two-thirds majority to override that veto? And that's a big question. Right now, today, they don't have the votes. And so Republicans are now working hard to put political pressure on Democrats, especially those on the fence. And there are many of them. There have been a lot of fence-sitting, tepid statements from Democrats coming out today, put pressure on those Democrats to get on the side against the president eventually to try to muster that two-thirds. One senior Republican in the House today, John, tweeted that they would fight with everything they had to kill this deal. So you know where that's headed.
It seems that even some Democrats are taking some opportunistic advantage of this 60-day waiting time. I mean, here's former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, a candidate for president, saying she's, you know, cautious but supportive. Listen.
This is an important step in putting the lid on Iran's nuclear program. There will be a number of issues that have to be addressed. This agreement will have to be enforced vigorously, relentlessly. We have to treat this as an ongoing enforcement effort, which I certainly strongly support, and as president would be absolutely devoted to ensuring that the agreement is followed.
So support, but she's going to verify it if President Obama doesn't.
A supportive but somewhat tepid statement from Hillary Rodham Clinton there. Now, that was on Capitol Hill earlier today, just after Clinton had met with House Democrats. And many of those House Democrats, John, told us coming out of that meeting that her message to them directly in private was much more supportive than that statement to the press. And that was vital, and here's why. Republicans who are vehemently against this deal were hoping to rely on Hillary to make her own this deal, hoping to put pressure on her to reject it, and that would cause other Democrats, since she's running for president and is the front runner, to reject it too. That acceptance right there was vital to President Obama. There are reports that Hillary Clinton and President Obama spoke late last night about this deal. It's vital for the White House, because now lots and lots of Democrats who are tepid, John, they have cover to support in that override vote, which is coming before the fall.
Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
You got it.